Hey, it's hot and cold Saturday morning. I'm Tom. Who was that talking in the background? That wasn't me. My goodness, this radio station is just going to hell in a bucket. I'm sorry. Except I did that. That wasn't the station. It's a good place. Anyway, good morning. It's hot and cold Saturday morning. I just got an email from my brother, who is in Rome in a church doing a Latin Mass. And he hasn't caught on fire yet, so I guess that's a good sign. He has visited our family over there, my mother's family. What remains of it, you get to a point where everybody, I was over there almost, I'm embarrassed to admit this, almost 70 years ago. That makes me kind of old, I think. And all those people are gone, all the people I saw. But that's life. That's the way it goes. But anyway, last Saturday, my brother, I guess it was Friday. Friday night, he landed, Friday night our time, landed in Italy, in Naples. And Saturday afternoon, which would have been late their time, we did a FaceTime thing, which is very strange for me. I you know, this is family now who I've never met, who are direct, well, they're all cousins, you know, cousins, children of cousins. At any rate, they were kind of impressed to see me, although I've sent pictures before. You know, we swapped photographs of our families via email to speak live. And the cousin that my brother was visiting was the son of my mother's sister. In other words, my aunt. And they all were like flummoxed by the fact that I look somewhat like my aunt and my mother in a manly kind of way. and I can see that in photographs, looking back to my grandmother as well on my mother's side. I see facial similarities, which is interesting, you know. And I've got this whole family tree I've never met. I've spoken to them now, and they speak, some of them at least, speak pretty darn good English. And you know, for me, I was discussing this with my wife last night. It's kind of embarrassing, the fact that if you think about Europe in general, every country pretty much has a different language. And really, in the continent, if you call it that, of Europe, Italy and France, or Italy and Switzerland, which, you know, are connected, share border, completely different languages. And the similarity there to me, and maybe I'm just really naive about this, I don't think I am, is like, well, it's New York and New Jersey. But just think about speaking different languages and being multilinguistic. Now, yeah, some of the Romance languages are similar, but they're not that similar. And to be speaking to somebody in Italy who speaks English way better than I can speak it, all I can do is swear in Italian a little bit. you know, they speak such good English, which is, you know, not in a close by country, England, but then again, a lot of tourists are going to Italy, and they're in the resort business, so they do speak English. Anyway, it was fascinating. I'm still kind of digesting the whole concept. Of course, they want me to come over to Italy, which would be something. And as it turns out, where my brother and his family were staying, you could in Naples, you could walk to Herculaneum, which is like Pompeii, with been buried by Vesuvius eruptions. Fascinating. And of course, I'm looking forward. He has sent me some photos. I'm looking forward to a lot more stuff. Anyway, he's in Rome today, so they can connect the flight to Dublin and then to Seattle, go from Dublin to Seattle. I still can't wrap my head around that kind of flight. that you just you get in Europe and you get out on the west coast of the United States. That's absolutely amazing. But it's all good, and I'm looking forward to stories. The food looks really good, as one might imagine it would, being in Italy. So, exciting. Lost, you know, I asked my brothers, look, you're in Italy, you're with family. We need some family history of the Panichones, which is my mother's family, to know a little bit more. And he did a photograph of the place where my grandparents lived, which I had visited when I was, you know, very small. And just interesting. And it looked nice. It looked like and he also had gone to Malta. And, you know, Malta, I knew, was a place in the Mediterranean Sea. I didn't realize it was a little south of Sicily. And I said, well, how hot is it there? It says it's like 80, but there's a nice breeze coming off the ocean. That's living, man. It's 80 degrees. Nice breeze keeps you comfortable. And you know the water is warm. You know that if you go in the water, it's not like if you step in the ocean here in Maine, that you're going to have a seizure because the numbness is just creeping into your body. You have my admiration. If you're swimming in the ocean this morning in the glorious state of Maine, my hat is off to you because you're of hearty stock. I can't do it. I'll go barefoot, but I just jump it in. Maybe I should. Maybe that would be the thing I need. I need something. I need this right now. We got to take a break. It is hot and cold Saturday morning. We'll be right back. It's all wound up on Saturday morning. I don't get that. Hey, it's hot and cold. Phone number is 1-800-966-1039. Text line is 601-207-4478. Let's see. Oh, we got the airplane out of the shop this week, and Pete actually went through all the parts and took new photographs, and I brought the fuselage over to where he had all the parts, excuse me, and we're this much closer to putting the plane out on display. I don't think it's going to sell for what we want to get for it, and we just soon put it out and play with it. So I put the the cowling over where the motor would go. We're leaving the motor out because that's probably we're going to sell that. But the I put the cowling on, so it looks more like an airplane in the front. And probably we're going to sell the propeller and make one up because the propeller's valuable. So we're a little bit closer to figuring this out. Pete went through, like I say, went through all the parts, and they're all there. We can put it back together. Excuse me. And it's gonna look sharp. I just can't wait. If we do put it out, we're gonna have to have a Santa Claus inside of it Christmas time. And God knows what we'll have in it for Halloween. But it's coming. It's that much closer. I need to get it out of my shop. It takes up a lot of floor space. And I was tight on floor space before, but it's forcing me to move stuff around and clean up, and it's not going very well. But I'm trying. I really am. It's better than it was. So the cowling's on. So that's, like I say, it looks like an airplane. Speaking of projects, my friend Matthew worked and sort of still does work in the recycling industry. I mean, he worked for big recycling companies. And, I mean, like, as an example, recycling iPhones in Australia. And international recycling companies, not just, you know, like a local junkyard or anything. And he always has cool stuff that he puts online for sale. And I just happened to look at his cool stuff one day, and there's an accordion project. They go together. It was all apart. And free. Price is right. And, you know, what's more fun than assembling an accordion? So I contacted him, and he said there was somebody ahead of me who already asked about it. And at any rate, he came in the other day, or he called me the other day, and he said something about the accordion. I said, well, you, it's gone, right? He says, no, it's yours. The other person never showed. He had said he had messaged me. I never saw the message. So I got an accordion project. That's, you know, banjos and accordions. I mean, they just go together. The only other thing I need now are bagpipes. And I had a set of bagpipes I gave to a friend years ago. And boy, wouldn't it be cool to have bagpipes? Boy, I think the divorce attorney would be having a conversation with Mrs. Gosey about that. The accordion I might get away with. I don't think the bagpipes on top of the accordion and all the banjos are going to fly. So we'll see. Speaking of Mrs. G, I get in, you know, Friday is the day that she does all my laundry. So I, Thursday night, if I need to change what, you know, like pantaloons or something, because I've kind of messed them up over the week, put on clean clothes, clean pants at least. Everything else is clean every day, very sanitary. But I'll put on a clean pair of jeans or pants or whatever. So for the past 2 weeks now, Friday morning I've got clean pants on, and Friday afternoon they are a literal mess. I've gotten into something dusty for a couple weeks now. So I put on clean pants on Thursday night. I put them out Thursday night, right? And yesterday I go to work, and I wasn't doing anything dusty. I wasn't doing that much of anything, but I got fuel oil on them. And man, you know, there's nothing like the delicate bouquet of fuel oil, number two fuel oil, to make you feel good. So I thought, well, maybe it's on my T-shirt, not my pantaloons. And the T-shirt went in the wash last night, but it is not. It might be my shoes. Matter of fact, I could take a shoe off and I could check it right now. It's not that shoe. Maybe it's the other shoe. I'm not taking my pants off in the studio. I'm sorry. No, it's got to be the pants. So I think when I get home from the radio today, if she's not listening, I'm okay. We've got to sneak out another pair of pants and hide these till next Friday. But it's been consistent. I get one day out of them, and they're kind of shot. But I guess what I had done was a couple days earlier, I needed a lifter pump. We have a Roth oil tank in the shop. A Roth oil tank, if you're not familiar with it, is a vertical tank, and it draws the oil off the top. It's a plastic tank inside a galvanized container, and it lifts it pumps water out of the top of the tank, goes to the oil burner. And we've had some issues with it staying primed. So I said, well, I'm just going to put a lifter pump on it. I've gone through all the connections. Everything seems okay. So I'll put a lifter pump on it, and then I've got positive gravity flow down to the oil burner, and I don't have to think about it. Well, in the process of getting one lifter pump, I somehow got four. I'm not going to even try to explain it. But I used one of the older. I had two monitor pumps and two Toyotomi pumps. If anybody needs, by the way, if you need a lifter pump, have I got a deal for you? Because I've got two I'm going to sell, and two I'm keeping, because at some point I might put a Roth tank at my house. Matter of fact, if I can find one affordably priced before the season starts, I'll do that project at my house. Because, you know, there's nothing more fun than changing out oil tanks. I just want you to know that, in case you don't know that for a fact. That's just a sweet project. Especially, it's coming from one who stinks like number two fuel oil and hadn't touched any yesterday. I had touched nothing. Somewhere it got on the floor or something. I was working on some stuff on the floor, and I got into it. I said, well, maybe it's my hands. I'll wash my hands. It's not my anyway. So the lifter pump, I got one in, though. I got the one in at my shop. And tested the heating system because, you know, it was nice and warm on Thursday. So let's turn on the heat and see if it works. And everything works fine. So I'm pleased with that. And it looks good. Everything does what's supposed to do. And I didn't screw that one up. It's you take success where you can get it. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. Well, let's see. Let's see. I'm your age, Tom. I only missed 5 morning swims since May 1st. Yes, May swims quick. I have thermometer on this morning. It is 63 this a.m. Not bad at all. Okay. Well, bless you for that. I guess if you're moving fast enough, exerting enough energy, and I find I overheat quickly, so maybe 63, maybe that's the new normal. But I kind of liked it when it was like 80. I don't know. Let's see. Good morning. Someone I know has a camp on post. The one end is almost in dirt. The other 2 feet plus. The problem is mold in the winter. They don't have heat in the winter. Any ideas? The dilemma is that the camp will, well, first of all, underneath the building, if it's molding there, ideally it would make sense to spray foam it or cover it with sheet foam and screw it to the bottom of the floor joists to keep the floor a little bit warmer. If that's what's going on there, the end that's in the dirt is obviously going to be a little bit of a challenge. And actually, that brings up a point I'll be discussing in a little while about foundation systems in general. But by insulating the floor, upstairs will stay a little bit warmer. And what happens if that floor is not insulated, you'll drop below the dew point in the living space at times, and that can cause mold to form as well. But at very least, it's probably going to show up on the bottom side of the floor, and that ain't good. So yeah, insulating is the simple solution. Spray foam is ideal. Not cheap, but it's ideal because it's quick and somebody else does. Somebody else is crawling under there, not you. Hey, we got to take a break. It's 8:29. We'll be right back.
Is it an earthquake or simply a shock? Is it that good turtle soup or merely the mock? Is it the cocktail, this feeling of joy? Or is what I feel, what I feel, real McCoy? Is it for all time, or is it simply a lie?
All right, one, two, three, four.
Okay, it is 8:35. Let's check in with Chelsea over at Bangor Humane Society this morning and see what's going on. I have a feeling you probably don't have any birds, Chelsea, but I know there's a couple other animals kicking around.
Yeah, we've got quite a few animals kicking around, so no birds right now.
Okay.
You never know.
You never know. That's right.
Yeah, we've got a lot of really wonderful animals, and I'm actually going to talk about a cat today.
Okay.
We have a lot of cats right now, and dogs, but a lot of cats. And this sweetheart has been here far too long. He is ready for his home. His name is Bubba, Bubba the cat. He is so handsome.
He
you can
is.
Go right on the website.
Yeah, I'm looking right at him.
Oh, he's so sweet. He's 14, so he is on the older side. But, oh, man, he loves a good cuddle session. He's super sweet and mellow. He's a gentleman, and he's definitely ready for his forever retirement home. He's super calm. He has a sweet, loving heart. He loves a comfy bed. That's kind of like his safe spot. Mm-hmm. I don't blame him. Mine, too.
Yeah.
He is the perfect companion for anyone looking for a more quiet, affectionate friend to share their days. Now, Bubba does have a seizure disorder, so it is manageable with daily medication, which he takes like a champ. But his new family will need somebody who can stick with that routine and keep an eye on his health. In return, he will offer endless purrs and gentle head bumps, he promises. He has experience living with other cats and dogs, and he may be open to sharing the home with respectful pets who can understand that he values his space and that peace, calming presence. A calm, predictable environment can help him thrive. He's a special senior boy who has much love to give, and he's just great, and I love him. If I could take him, I totally would, but my kitties are a little bit more rambunctious, so I don't think he'd like mine. But he's great. He's definitely ready for his home, so somebody come and get him.
Yeah.
He's great.
And he's a handsome guy. And I'm looking down, I'm scrolling down the page here. My goodness.
Yes.
You got a lot of cats, and they're all good looking. Not that many cats are really objectionable to look at, but these are all good lookers.
Oh, they're great. And again, you know, if you're looking for a younger, we've got younger or an older. We've got lots of animals right now. So please come down. We're open today from 12 to 6 p.m. And then Monday through Friday, we're open from 1 to 6 p.m. So if you don't make it today, don't worry. You can come back.
Okay. And I'm just looking at through the whole site here. You got a couple of guinea pigs, too, Rolly and Pongo.
Yeah. They're so sweet, too. They're really funny in the morning. I'll go around.
I bet.
I'm instinctively the one who gives treats to them, so it's almost like they know. So they'll just squeak at me all the time. It's great. I love it.
Sounds good. All right. Well, Chelsea, yes. Thank you. It's good to talk to you, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Yeah, sounds perfect.
All right. Thanks. Take care now.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Yes.
Cool. So we got, they got a lot of cats. And if you're interested, it's a good time to go. Our phone number is 1-800-966-1039. Text 601-207-447. I am a little off kilter this morning. Here it is, 8:39, and I have not gotten the vintage instrument list from Benunzio Vintage Instruments this morning. And you know, I have to have a little bit of banjo pictures. I got to check again. Maybe they're just behind. They're not there. Now, my buddy John Bernunzio, who's got a couple of years on me, is sort of slightly retired. And I'm wondering if that's why the boss is off doing other stuff. He's fishing and stuff. And maybe these guys are going to have to talk to somebody. That's what I'm going to have to do. Speaking of talking to people, if you're looking for appliance parts or service, there is General Appliance over on Center Street in Brewer, open 9 to 4 Monday through Friday. If you're looking for, excuse me, I'm choking on it because it's such a good thing that you know these people. General Appliance is on Center Street, open 9 to 4 Monday through Friday. If you're looking for appliance parts or service, give them a call, 989-4341. And I have to explain something. And as I take the Ricola out of the package, and I apologize for having to take a Ricola while I'm on the air, but I am in the midst of immunotherapy to try to get over all the stuff that goes on in my leaky head, and they're treating everything. and the fun part, it's not bad. It's what they call sublingual. You put drops under your tongue, and they do this for a while. And I'm still in kind of the beginning phase of it. And this is the fun part because it has made me so tired. And all I do is, when I'm not at work, and sometimes when I am at work, nap. And it's one of the side effects or at least that's the excuse I got. It's one of the side effects of immunotherapy. But in 3 months to a year, coughing will be gone. And the runny nose and all the rest of it. So we'll see. We'll see how it goes. And I will share more information about it if and when it works the way it's supposed to. In the meantime, I apologize because I am dealing with more symptoms now than when I started. It's not real bad, but it is there. And if it works, cool. If not, I'll be whining about it some more. My wife had a question about our water quality. We have a well. Our house is on a well, and there is town water goes right by. And when we bought the house, the pump had failed, and I debated about hooking up to the local water district. I had no major problem with that. I wasn't crazy about having to pay a monthly or a quarterly bill, but that was not that big a deal. The problem is that I live on a hill, and I actually live just down the street from their water tank, and there's not enough pressure coming off the system where I live. So they told me I would have to put a booster pump in my house, and it would have to be on my deed that there had to be a booster pump in the house to get the pressure high enough to work the way one would expect it would work. I'm like, this sounds bureaucratic. And I understand you need a booster pump. You can put it on my deed. Come on. So I just swapped the pump out, the submersible pump. So we're on town water. I'm on a well, my private well. And 2 months ago, I guess I put a new whole house filter in. And my wife said, I think the water looks kind of funny. And I said, well, let me test it. And we tested the water, and everything came out perfect. And I just did a bacteria test the other day. I had to order it. And that came out okay. So and it's something you should do on a quarter, not a quarterly, but depends on your water. If you have an issue, I would say quarterly, maybe even monthly. But we do it about every 6 months. And everything was spot on where it should be. And you can get water tests online. They're not terribly expensive, the DIY tests. I looked at the state of Maine just to see what, if you send it out to get it tested, it can get kind of pricey. But you can get water test strips yourself and test the water yourself. And by all means, if you're on a well, you're in the state of Maine, you know, groundwater hopefully never changes, but then again, it does. So for the basic stuff that, you know, folks talk about, you can do it yourself and quite affordably. So phone number 1-800-966-1039, text 601-207-4478. I've been messing around with routers past couple of days, and I have a couple of Craftsman router tables, and they leave me kind of underwhelmed. These are older ones that a friend of mine had, and I set them up, and they're not very, very good. You know, they were inexpensive, and I feel the need to buy some quality equipment, not just go with something cheap. I mean, I don't have a lot of money tied up in them. I borrowed one just to set. I wanted to set up two different routers. I have one on a little bit better Craftsman router table. But I'm looking at the two of them. I'm thinking, you know, these aren't that good. You know, they're just not put that well put together. Not as precise as I would like them to be. And challenging to work with. So I'm feeling the need for some high-quality woodworking equipment, doggone it. I mean, so that's in the pipeline for me. As I'm making more, this is antithetical to the name Tom Gosey, more precise things. You need decent equipment. You can't just get cheap stuff and expect good quality. So, you know, it was the garbage in, garbage out. So we'll get there. It's an interesting process, especially as one at my age is gaining a little bit of woodworking skill. So we'll see. But I also got two things that will help tremendously with what I'm attempting. And one is for gluing, because I'm gluing wood blocks into a rim, a round rim, not unlike a wooden barrel. And you have to clamp it together. And, you know, it's a challenge to clamp a round thing. So yesterday in the mail arrived six, count them, six 12-inch diameter hose clamps. Perfect for clamping the thing onto a form and getting nice tight glue joints. And I did some gluing last night just to try it out. And the only challenging part was the nut that you tighten. Normally those would be maybe 8 millimeter or even 10 millimeter. This one was 7. So I got a 7 millimeter socket from work and tightened it up. But as you get to the end of tightening things, the socket moves enough that you can't get the nut moves enough you can't get a socket on it. So I picked up a 7 millimeter open end box wrench on the other end. because I didn't have one. So add that to my bag of tricks. But it did a good job. It really torqued it down. But that's not the end of it. And I'm going to let you in on a trade secret, because I've been challenged by glue joints not holding. And I've been kind of trying to figure out a way to do this and still keep the whole fabrication process relatively simple. And was going round and round with it. And I said, well, wait a minute. They make stainless steel cable ties. Do they have one long enough that would go wrap around the entire rim? That would be a permanent fixture, because they're not unattractive. And they're lightweight. And they, in fact, make a 36-inch long cable tie out of stainless steel. That would be perfect as a permanent clamp for this to help hold everything together, reinforce the glue joints. And I bought a tensioner, which I would use for any cable tie, not just for stainless steel. Thought, you know, why would you need one of those? Well, I came up with a reason. So that arrived yesterday. So I was messing around with that last night with interesting results. And I had to order long cable ties, which are coming, I think, today. So this is going to be a very exciting weekend. In fact, it does. And then we will test it. I've got one rim I made that glue joint was, I had one glue joint that kind of weakened a bit and stretched. So I cleaned it out, took it apart last night, cleaned it out, re-glued it with the big hose clamps on it. Took that apart this morning, and sometime if the 36-inch clamps come today, oh boy, I tell you what, it's going to be just an exciting weekend. It just going to get no better than that. Maybe use one of the extra lift pumps laying around a city water booster. I don't think so. We're talking number two fuel. I already smell a number two fuel oil. I'm not going to drink it, okay? But there's a specific – actually, I believe I have a booster pump on hand that I could use for that. I was looking for a stainless steel circulator, water circulator pump, and got one that would be used. I didn't buy it for that reason, and this was a few years after the fact when the water district told me what we had to do. But, I kind of like having my own well. And it's 4 years ago now? I think it's 4 years ago. I turned the power on to the pump. We're working on the house. I said, well, let's see if we got water. I turned the power on, turned the hose on, and water's coming out. Cool. And then it stopped. I mean, literally, water's flowing, and within a minute, it's down to a trickle, and then nothing. So we messed with it a little bit, and I pulled the pump. And I made the mistake of doing that by myself. I got a pitless adapter puller, and I let me just see. And I yank on the thing, and the pitless adapter came, you know, freed from the connector, and now I'm pulling pipe. Well, let's see what happens. Well, it's about 150 feet of pipe. And I thought, well, you know, once I've disconnected, I got to keep going. And I'm pulling pipe, and I'm pulling pipe, and I'm pulling pipe, and I'm really getting puckered. I mean, you know, you got 150 feet of pipe with a pump on the end. So I finally get it out, and there it is. Yep, pump doesn't look good to me. So I picked up a new Gould pump and some of the hardware. I wanted to replace the wiring. The wiring had been spliced in several places. Okay, let's just replace the wiring. So I got new wiring. And I'm getting ready to do this. And before I did that, I had Pete downstairs, and we're on cell phones. I said, turn the pump on. Let me just see if it's functioning at all. Maybe, you know, maybe I missed something. And I happened to touch the pump. And I was able to test the electrical current going into the pump. I got a really nice lift out of it. Okay, stop, turn it off, and swapped out the pump. When I put it back in, I had Pete with me. And you know, I'm thinking, well, I got to align the pitless adapter, and there was nothing. Just went right in. So it's fun, you know, and so that got us thinking about, and we've been discussing it for 2 years now and have not done it, but I think we have to soon. The property we're at where we have our business, there's a pump, there's a well there, excuse me. And I've owned that property for 21 years. With the pump that's in there for 21 years, that I have my doubts about the person. It does have a pitless adapter, so that's good. But I have my doubts about the person who put it in, because I've seen all his handiwork. And all of it, just none of it has ever left me feeling warm and fuzzy. All of it has been marginal at best. And so at some point, Pete said, well, we should pull the pump before it fails, because you know it's going to fail in January. And we'll be out there in the cold swearing a lot, or paying somebody a lot of money to do it, because they've got all the equipment to pull the pump out with a with a machine. There is no labor involved. And I'm almost going to bet that if I pull that sucker out, there's going to be splices on the line that goes down to the pump, because it's just the way that would have been done. But anyway, we'll see. We got to take a break, though. It's 8:55. It is hot and cold. It is Saturday morning. Phone number is 1-800-966-1039. Text line 601-207-4478. This is the good day of the weekend. Tomorrow's going to be muggy, and we got a couple days of heat, and then we're back to a lovely time of year in the glorious state of Maine. Stay with us. We'll be back in just a bit. It is hot and cold, and it is Saturday, and we're going to dance.
Something big.
You're lunching at 21, watching your diet, declining a Charlotte Russe, accepting a fig. When out of a clear blue sky, it's suddenly gallon guy. And this could be the start of something big. There's no controlling the unrolling of your fate, my friend. Who knows what's written in the magic book?
But when a lover discover at the gate, my friend, invite her in without a second look.
You're up in an aeroplane, or dining at Sardi's, or lying at Malibu alone on the sand. You suddenly hear a bell, and right away you can tell that this could be the start of something grand.
We're back. It's 9:06. It's hot and cold Saturday morning. Good morning again. I'm Tom. Phone number is 1-800-966-1039. Text line is 601-207-4478. We've been talking a lot about construction lately as I mull over options. And one thing I came across years ago when the whole concept first came out of pressure-treated foundation system is actually fairly simple. It's a pressure-treated wall, pressure-treated lumber, pressure-treated plywood on the outside, waterproofing. A pretty basic, simple concept. It has to have really good drainage. It's probably conceivably as watertight as poured concrete could be. Maybe not quite as tight, but close. And with good technique, it would work. But there's another part to this. There's another way to use pressure treated that was in the a manual, if you will, that Southern Forest Products Council came out with, and that is a pressure treated slab. And I actually have done several of these over the years, and just kind of stumble across what works and what doesn't work. Most recently I've done one where I built a porch, and the porch is right on the ground, pressure treated slab on the, technically it's not on the ground. It is on foam insulation. So it's segregated from the ground a little bit. I had done one probably 20 some years ago where I made a foam building panel, again, with pressure treated on the bottom and then foam core and then more framing and a deck on top. But I did that one a little different because the concern is when you're dealing with pressure-treated lumber, and this bears repeating, and I repeat it a lot, and I apologize for that, but it's kind of important. Pressure-treated lumber is pressure-treated. They use pressure to impregnate the wood with copper to keep it from rotting. And it's all good, except that it's a waterborne material, the copper that goes into the wood, and it has the potential to come out of the wood again. And it does. Now, nothing's perfect. Nothing's absolute forever. So it becomes a simple equation. Pressure treating protects the wood. If we keep the pressure treating in the wood, it would technically last a very, very long time. And in fact, that could be a fairly simple process. You wrap it with plastic. You can wrap it with you could put on, if you're doing, say, a basement wall out of pressure treated, you could use a spray undercoat, not undercoating. This gives me my car and brain thinking, but it's similar. Spray waterproofing that goes in the outside of foundation and drainage, of course, good drainage. If you're building a slab on grade, it becomes a little bit simpler in some ways, in that a slab on grade, if you look at somebody building today, and I'm just thinking of one, there was a house just down the street from us had a fire, and they did the groundwork and it was up, they brought in fill and I would say they elevated the site maybe, Two feet, nice fill, compacted, and they put a slab on top of it. Now, that slab is higher than the surrounding ground. So what's going to happen when it rains? The water's going to run off and run downhill away from the slab. So the slab, if the slab was not treated in any other way to keep it dry, because concrete does have what they call capillarity. Water will suck into it if it's dry because there's a building over it. And the edges and bottom was wet. It would conduct moisture into the house. Well, we don't do that. We shouldn't do that. And normally when we build a slab, there's a piece of plastic down, a vapor barrier, and insulation as well. And these are both barriers to keep water either by capillarity or just gross wetness, you know, being submerged, if you will, away from it to keep the building dry. And, of course, it's graded so it's not going to be submerged, although it happens because people don't do stuff right. But it's fairly simple stuff, rules that you kind of have to live by if you're going to build a building anywhere. So if we then say, okay, well, we're going to take out the concrete, we're going to put in pressure-treated lumber, what happens? Well, same thing, except the pressure-treated lumber has to be kept dry because we don't want water to run through it or on it and leach out the material that's in there that makes the lumber rot-proof. And in fact, you conceivably don't even need to use pressure-treated lumber, but, you know, come on. It's not expensive, and it does a good job. So what I did 20-some years ago, rather than just use plastic, which would have been adequate, but it's not quite as, you know, it's easy if you take even 10 mil poly, you can poke a hole in that easily. And that isn't necessarily a bad problem. But if you had something a little more robust, so much the better. So what I did in that case, and if I was doing one today, I would still do it. I think I used 0.060 EPDM roofing, rubber roofing. And so, you know, I question myself as I do these things, does that make sense? And this has stood the test of time, by the way. But when you stop and think about this a little bit more, if you EPDM has been used for years, it's a synthetic rubber, and it's very weather resistant. If it's going to break down, it usually is going to break down because of sunlight. Well, if it's underneath a pressure treated slab, and at the edge of the slab, which you could cover, it's not getting any sunlight. But it's also really thick rubber that, you know, you're challenged to poke through it with a nail. But we go a step further and we say, okay, well, you know what else we use EPDM for? We use it for wire insulation. All those wires you see overhead are insulated is EPDM. The underground cable that would be directly buried, the service cables, are thick EPDM, thicker than what I'm talking about, but buried underground because it just doesn't fail in that environment. So I'm kind of thinking, well, you know, and again, getting back to the beauty of stick building a foundation in this way, knowing the limitations you have, you can do a pretty good job and a very fast job in getting on site. And one day you're building a slab, the next day you're building the building right on top of it. So here's where I am, and this is this goes from week to week in an evolutionary process. Here's where I am right now. Okay, so we build a pressure-treated slab, we protect it. Then we build a frost wall, pressure-treated, cover it with pressure-treated plywood, which would overlap the EPDM, so that's protected as well. And 2 feet high, and then we put our building on top of it. And that could be stick built with regular KD lumber. Doesn't have to be pressure treated. Quick and easy. Not the cheapest thing in the world, but it's cheaper than concrete, and it's way faster. And that's the moment we're at right now. And the moment we're at now is we got to take a break because it's 9:16. I talk too much. It is hot and cold, though. Saturday morning, our phone number, once again, 1-800-966-1039. 601-207-4478 is the text line. We'll be back. back. I don't know about you, but I gotta watch one of the Mission Impossible movies this weekend. I just gotta do it. I mean, yeah, come on, hey. This is what they call a flash mob. In case you don't know what a flash mob is, just a bunch of musicians get together, kind of secretly, obviously not secret, but surreptitiously, and they're in. This is in Bulgaria in a subway station, and I want to tell you, I want to go to Bulgaria and go in the subway. That is really, you could talk about the communists, but man, they got nice subways. I tell you what, it's really, really impressive. And they play the Mission Impossible theme while you're waiting for the train. I think if I was somewhere where a flash mob showed up, I'd probably have a heart attack. It'd just be too cool. It just would be too much for me to cope with. Let's see. Got a text message here. What's your asphalt architectural shingle brand of choice these days? What should I look for in terms of length of warranty? A long warranty. Warranty, I'm not sure how good a shingle warranty actually is. But I know shingle, some, companies do honor them if they're done properly. I don't have a particular brand, but I would be shopping warranty for sure. And, Ico is a good brand. CertainTeed is a good brand. I would go with a name brand, and there's others, but and I would be looking at warranty. I'm not a fan of shingles. I don't know if you're getting that impression or not, but I don't like asphalt shingles. I think they look great. And they are really user-friendly for complicated roofs. You got a lot of valleys and dormers and stuff. You could bang that stuff out pretty quick. If it's a straight-ahead roof, two flat sides or four flat sides, because it's got some steps in or something, I would be doing metal and I wouldn't look back. You might spend a little bit more money, but if you're young enough that you're going to be there a while or you anticipate being there a while, I think not having to think about re-roofing in 20 years is a big thing. And you do spend more money if you can do it yourself. And again, if it's a flat roof, it's not complicated. I had somebody do my roof. I did a standing seam screw-down roof, a hidden fastener, excuse me. It was screwed to the roof, though. But I had somebody do it because there were flashing details that were a little more than I wanted to do. There was a chimney. That's not the end of the world. But then I had a stepped roof, the porch roof coming off of the house roof. So it was two different angles. Not a big deal. But I said, you know what? I didn't have the time to do it. And B, let's get somebody who can do it and be done with it. And it was a good price. It was a fair price. I bought the materials. He worked up the parts list. I found the particular guy I used through Ware Butler, which is now going to be Hammond Lumber. And, if you go to a place, the Ware Butler was originally Stillwater Lumber and Crescent Lumber, and they fabricate metal roofing themselves. So I said, who do you have that you recommend in my area as a roofer? And I got a name and got the guy, and he did a good job. He got it done faster than I thought he was going to, which is okay. He did it all right. And as it turns out, the cost for the whole deal, my supplying the materials from the list he gave me and his labor was still much better than a lot of places. So I hope that helps. Asphalt, has its place, I guess. Not my place, but Tom, I read where Maine's electric rates went up 36% from May 2024 to May 2025. Have you heard this? Curious your thoughts on this. Yeah, I have heard it. And I've been meaning to look at my electric bill or bills, and I've not seen, it's kind of a relative thing. We historically, everybody's kind of wound up about it, I know. Historically, Maine has always had expensive electric rates. And it has to do with the fuel mix that we have. I'm not sure. I don't know that the impact of solar and wind is as significant as other folks are talking about. Maybe it is. I have not researched it. So some folks will just throw numbers. I'm not throwing numbers unless I know what they are. And I have not looked at it. I'll try to remember to look at it between this week and next week because it is a significant issue. I don't think there's much we can do about it in the short term. In the long term, we'll see. Has it gone up 36%? I think probably, I know it's gone up. I don't know if it's that much. I saw somewhere that the problem we get into is folks start to throw numbers around a lot of times. Somebody's saying that, well, electric rate is 36 cents a kilowatt hour. It's not. It's less than that. But it has gone up. It's unfortunate, and it would be nice to get these numbers, good or bad, from somebody who isn't just in social media. I'm sorry. I look at social media like everybody else. I'm usually looking at basset hounds and donkeys, but I can't take any of the numbers I see on social media as gospel. I've got to find it from some other, hopefully, objective third party, because there's too many bots, too much AI stuff kicking around. And if you don't know this, I suspect most of you do, if you're on Facebook or even YouTube or any place else for that matter, they're tracking what you look at and will tailor the messaging you see to what they perceive as your meta information. Is that the right way to say it? I think it is. It's not good. I mean, that's not helpful. But it is what it is. We're going to take another break. It's 9:30. Pete is dealing with a customer this morning. So I'm going to check up on him, see where he's at. But I have a feeling he's going to be busy for a while, which is good. If he's selling a car, we can do without Pete.
England swings like a pendulum do. Bobby's on bicycles two by two. Westminster Abbey, the Tower of Big Ben, the rosy red cheeks of the little children. Now if you huff and puff and you finally save enough money up to take your family on a trip across the sea, take a tip before you take your trip. Let me tell you where to go. Go to England, oh. England swings like a pendulum do. Bobby's on bicycles two by two. Westminster Abbey, the Tower of Big Ben, the rosy red cheeks of the little children. Your mama's old pajamas and your papa's. We'll be right back.
It's 8:30, 9:36. Oh, my God, a whole hour. Where'd that first hour go? It's like a lost weekend is what it is. Let's see. A couple things. People will be with us shortly. Got some folks who are looking, but they're gone. So we will hear from Pete shortly. I did a little research. Somebody had texted me, a messaged me, said, all in, I paid $1.12 per kilowatt hour CMP. I don't know what you're paying, buddy, but the average rate in Maine is 27.9 cents, somewhere between 24 and 20, call it 28 cents. Don't know what to tell you. Something's not right there. Let's see. If one were to build a non-living space, a large workshop, completely off the grid, use solar power, does that need to comply with code to be approved by local jurisdiction? To answer it the way you asked, yes. And if you skirted the code person, which, you know, we could do in some parts of Maine, you still have homeowner's insurance. And I don't know how that plays out. If you build a building and you completely build it not to code, what happens and it burns down or you have some kind of failure. Let's say it blows down, it's not built structurally, or it burns down because it's not done properly electrically, or the heating systems, I guess you some aspects of this you can do, but I'm curious as to how that would play out with the insurance company. And I don't, you know, Rick has got that, so it rings in the studio. I'm putting that over. So the ringer rings when line three happens. And that happens for one reason. And one reason only. The program is interrupted in the flow that was otherwise there. And because Mr. Swamp Music is is calling us from Stockton Springs. Good morning, Pete.
Good morning.
How are you?
Not too bad. How you doing?
Okay.
So what's going on?
What's going on? Not much. You're just doing the radio show, Pete. That's all.
I'm sorry. I had a customer.
I know. I looked on the camera. I saw you there with people.
Yeah.
So.
They're looking at that mighty fine 2021 Prius Prime.
That's a nice car.
That is a nice car.
Yeah. Did they go out on a test drive?
No. They got it's smaller lady. She's got to get her cushion. She's got a cushion. She sits on when she drives. So she can, you know, prop her up to the proper height.
You got to bring your cushions if you're going to test drive. You're a small person.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
Good.
That's all that's going on here so far. Hey, you know what?
Yeah.
New legislative process thing I'm going to get going here.
Okay.
I had jury selection this week.
You jury duty.
No, jury selection.
Well,
jury
you were called in for jury duty. Let's put it that way.
No, I was called in. I was called in for jury selection. Oh, jury duty is when you're on a jury.
All right.
Hey, that's what it's called. There's a difference. Jury duty is when you're watching a trial. Jury selection is when they're selecting juries.
Okay.
I'm not making this stuff up. This ain't quantum mechanics. Anyway, I didn't get selected.
Why?
And I'm happy about that, but I'm a little bit offended. I'm happy I didn't get selected, but I'm just a little bit like, well, come on, Scooby-Doo, we could have solved this thing together. But that's my problem. Here's why everybody doesn't want to do it. It's not, well, first off, the benches you got to sit on are very uncomfortable. They're comfortable for about 20 minutes.
They are.
8 hours, they are not.
Tell me about it.
The seats in the jury box did not look more comfortable, although they did have armrests.
Yeah.
But here's why nobody wants to do it. This is passed by the legislation, okay? So this is something our politicians could easily fix. It'd be a simple fix.
Mm-hmm.
Where you're paid $15 a day to do it.
Mm.
Plus, you get 45 cents a mile. So 45 cents a mile for mileage and $15 a day. It's about $2 an hour. I don't want... here's the thing. I'll accept getting $15 a day, right? Mm-hmm. I'm going to be angry about it. But if I was a defendant, I would not be comfortable looking at those 12 people and thinking they're all trying to get out of here as quickly as possible because they're losing money every day they're here.
Yeah.
I'm not saying jurors should get paid $300 a day because then they're just going to stretch stuff out. But just a more reasonable daily wage. I'll tell you what, we'll do the $15 a day for the selection day because that's literally just standing up, answering questions, sitting down. Jury's getting organized. Everybody's, lawyers are picking people out. Apparently they don't like the looks of me. But once you're on the jury, I think the pay should be like $120 a day, right? So the next week when your regular paycheck is low, you've got some money that you got paid so you can keep the electricity on and buy food and I think it would, they go on everybody says it's your civic duty, which is interesting that someone just decided it was our civic duty. But the judge did make a good point. He said it's like paying your taxes or selective service, or there was something else, and I forget what it was. But the thing is, selective service, like if I get drafted, they're going to pay me for that,
And they're going to give you shoes.
I'm not trying to sound greedy about it. Like I could do 3 days on jury duty, and I'm not going to lose my house or my car or anything. But there's a lot of people that are the very hand to mouth. They can't afford to miss work to get $15 a day. And again, how good a decision are they going to make if that's all they're thinking about? They just want whatever will get you out of that box the fastest is what they want to do.
And you had tried.
And that's why everybody doesn't want to do it.
You had tried to explain that your father might buy the wrong cars, and that held no sway.
Nope. I was like, you're buying electric cars and rebuilds and all sorts of rusty things.
Well, I was on jury duty a couple of years ago in grand jury duty, and
a different beast entirely.
I was not happy about it, but I got into the zone pretty quick, and I thought, you know what? And grand juries for a whole year, it was interesting. It was challenging. Emotionally, just to be there and hear some of the things that go on in our fair state.
Work went pretty smoothly those days, though. I got to admit.
I agree. But the thing, I walked away from it. I was glad when it was done. I had a lot of respect for all the players, the judge or judges that I dealt with, and the all the courthouse folks, but the people who really are the people that I was impressed with were all the police, the state police, the sheriffs, dealing with some of the stuff that they have to deal with. And we know that they have to deal with a lot of challenging things at times. But it, some of it is rough. It's really right. Yeah. It isn't just a fight. Somebody's drunk and they're throwing beer bottles. It could be a lot worse. And a tremendous amount of respect for those folks that. And I knew, that they're dealing with a lot, but to actually hear what they're dealing with on a regular basis was a bit much. But we made it through, so it's all good. And everybody. What do we have? 22 people, I think, on grand jury. And it was interesting. Everybody made it through okay. Because it was a whole year, every other month, for 2 days.
In another lane,
yeah,
I complained to a company about something.
Uh-oh.
And I got a response to my email.
Mm-hmm.
And the response was AI.
Oh, nice.
I know it was AI. I could tell it was AI just from the wording of it, and it made me so unreasonably angry. Like, here's the thing. If a regular person had written the exact same information to me, I would have been like, nah, whatever, and I would have been fine. But the fact that it was AI made me so mad.
Yeah.
So I responded, and the AI responded again the way AI responds to things. it started blaming me for things, like my decisions, based on the shipping address I chose.
Yeah.
And I just got really, really, like, I don't even want to do business with them anymore.
Well, it was funny you bring that up. I ordered a part, and I wanted it rust-free, so I ordered it from New Mexico. It's a used part. And I had it shipped directly to our mechanics who's doing the work. And they said, well, that's not an address. It's a residential address. I said, no, it's a shop. It's a going business. It's not, there happens to be residential property there as well. And we went back and forth for a while. I don't know what. And so then they finally gave a neighbor's address, who said, well, they can deliver there. I said, and then I spoke to our mechanic and I said, do you, oh yeah, we get trucks in all the time. And we went round and round for about a day trying to get this sorted out. And, you know, I'm about ready to say, deliver it to me, except now I've got to truck this part, which was not a small part. It wasn't huge, but I've got to truck it to and you know, where I'm paying for shit. Well, it's going to be $275 more if it's a residential address. It's not a residential address. How many times do I have to tell you this?
Was this the part that showed up yesterday?
No. No,
different part.
Different part completely. Coming from New Mexico, where nothing rusts, apparently.
Yeah, it must be nice.
I know. It looked good. And I actually found the part in Connecticut. And the price was a third of the New Mexico price. Excited to pay shipping. The Connecticut price was free shipping. And I said, well, can you send me a picture? Oh, we can't do that. Well, then I'm not going to buy it.
No, thank you.
Excuse me. It was still on the vehicle, and I understand. Well, can you go out and take
get
a picture
under the
vehicle of it?
And take, people ask me for pictures under vehicles all the time. I'm like, I'll get them right to you.
Go take the picture. You want to sell the part. So it says to me, and understood, it's Connecticut. It's going to be crusty. How crusty, you know, so it's a relative thing. How crusty is it? If it's a little crusty, it's okay. But I have a part that's already pretty far gone I want to replace, and I'd like to have something that looks halfway decent because, as you say, people want to see underneath the car. It would be also nice to show them something that looks good, and I just don't want to if it's rusty, and we have this dilemma, if it's rusty, we'll want to undercoat it. I mean, if it's just simple surface rust, we're going to undercoat it to protect it. And then every so often somebody says, well, you're trying to hide something. Oh, God.
I'll caveat that with we use wet undercoating, so you can literally take it to a car wash and blow it off.
Everything.
So I'm not trying to hide rubberized undercoating.
Here's the deal. Next person that says that, we're going to give them some rubber gloves and a roll of paper towels. Go for it. You can wipe
now,
it off.
But usually if it's somebody standing here, they're trying to dicker is all.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's not, life's too short.
I get the weirdest emails from people trying to dicker on cars. They'll be like, oh, it's got 142K. Will you take $5,000 off? I'm like, oh, no, I didn't realize it had 142K.
Yeah.
Oh, I've been doing this for 10 years. I got a pretty good idea of what I'm doing with the pricing. Okay. I know it will sell at the price that I market at. Yeah. It's just a matter of when and how quickly do I want it gone.
Yeah. Well, here's the deal. If a little clue for those of you out there in Radio Land, because if you're shopping online, I understand you want to get the best price you can. Rather than make a offer online on a vehicle you have not seen in person, I think the better question is there any room on the price? That's a little bit more civilized approach.
But generally, I generally won't, even if there is a little bit of room on the car, I don't generally budge with inquiries online, because if, let's say the car is $10,000 and they're like, would you do $9,500? And I say, yeah, I would do $9,500. Then they come in and look at it. Well, now we're starting at $95. Then they say, well, I couldn't see this in the picture and I didn't know about this part, this little dent right here. And would you do $85? Because now I'm like, no. And now I seem like I'm being a stickler, you know?
Yeah. Well, you are a stickler.
I am a stickler. I am, but I'm a friendly one. I'm likable.
Yeah.
Jerry Seinfeld once described himself. He said, I'm a very happy guy who hates everything.
Okay.
Yeah. I think that's pretty, that's a pretty good one right there.
That fits pretty good.
I'm a happy guy who hates everything.
Yeah. Yeah. So, all right. Most of the cars we put out last week are gone. So I don't.
Busy week.
I don't think we have to talk about cars.
check out the website. There, you know what we got is up there.
Anything
Prius.store.
Anything you want is updated. So
yep. The Tacoma, you know what's interesting about that 2011 Tacoma? I had that parked out front, like at the mouth of the driveway, facing out. A couple of people stopped and looked at it. Really none. And I don't like to leave stuff out there for too long because it's not parked over the pavement. So I pulled it back, just pulled it back into a space. And then suddenly, from that angle, I think probably three people a day stopped and looked at it.
Yeah.
A couple of test drives, you know, questions. It's just, I don't know, people are just seeing it better, or if we're coming into truck season. We're probably coming into truck season is what it is.
I think we are. And we do
have all-wheel drive.
Yeah.
Time. We do have a number of all-wheel drive vehicles right now, gas and hybrid.
That's right.
Very nice hybrid RAV4 side-by-side.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, let's see. We got a let me do this. We've got a call coming in. Let's see if we can take it. Good morning. You're on the Voice of Maine. Hello? Turn down the radio.
Hi.
Hi.
All right. I got a car question for you.
Go ahead.
I have a 22 Hyundai Accent, and about 3 weeks ago, I started the car up. All the idiot lights came on. The low tire pressure, the trunk open light stayed on.
Mm-hmm.
So I took my tire gauge. I checked all the tires. Nothing wrong with them. I opened the trunk two or three times, nothing wrong with them. And then the next day I found out that both trip armatures and the average mile per gallon, which are supposed to stay on, but now when you shut the car off and turn them back on, they go out. So do you think it's a fuse?
I would check your 12-volt battery before I went too far. A lot of times, I'm going to let him go because he's got the radio playing in the background, but you can still hear me. The 12-volt battery, when it starts to fail, all the lights come on, all the computers are not working right. So that would be my first thing I would check is the 12-volt. And we've been dealing with this a lot this year in this hot spell that we've had because we don't run our cars every day. You know, if the car's out there for sale, We're trying to do that more now because we get caught short. Somebody comes in, if a car sat for 2 weeks, all the computers in the car are sort of in idle mode, and they're still drawing some current, and it can deplete the 12-volt battery, especially when it's hot out. So I that would be my first suspicion is a 12-volt battery. So if you have a voltmeter, check the battery voltage. If you don't, it may be worthwhile to take the battery out and take it somewhere to have it tested. But I hope somebody you knew had a voltmeter because I'll say I'm 65 to 70% that's your problem is a 12 volt battery, and we deal with this every day.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah,
it's interesting, especially on hybrids. A lot of people will in the winter. Excuse me, I got a frog in my throat. In the winter, you know, in particular, that issue of all the computers sort of trickle drawing off that battery can pull it down. If your battery's a little bit old, you'll need a jump start. And everybody always says, hang on one sec. sorry.
Okay.
And everybody always says, I don't even understand why, you get the big hybrid battery. What do you need the 12-volt battery for? Consider this. Pretend you got a hybrid car and you leave the dome light on. And you go into the house, and you leave that dome light on for like 2-3 days, where you go, God forbid, you go on a trip and leave it on. You come back, and you've tanked that hybrid battery. It's really going to ruin your day. It's much better to replace a 12-volt.
Well, normally...
So the 12-volt starts the car, and then the hybrid battery kicks on.
When you shut the hybrid car off, the hybrid battery disconnects from the 12-volt, and the car is just running off the 12-volt. The standby stuff's running off 12-volt. So you can, and they're not big batteries, usually. So it's pretty, and matter of fact, that happened to me. I had a customer's car that needed a 12-volt, and the rear hatch is the Prius.
The rear hatch.
Rear hatch latch wasn't engaging right, and it was leaving something on. We didn't notice it, and it depleted a brand-new 12-volt battery. I put it on the charger, and it's all functioning okay. And I realized once I saw it, that was the latch issue. But anyway, you know what? We're out of time, Pete.
Well, hot dog. I don't think we actually covered anything in the last half hour.
Well, no, you were dealing with a customer, and that's fine. And I want you to continue to do that.
I do enjoy it.
deal with customers, nice people who come in to see us, and sell them something nice. Very nice. Sir. On a nice day. He's such a nice boy, that PETA.
Oh, they're such nice boys over there. They
can't. Pete, thank you. We'll talk to you next week.
Thank you.
Thank you. Everybody out there, have a great week. See you then. Day is all I need. T. Rubble's more or less be or the me, I guess, when the sun doesn't shine. But there's that pocket full of miracles, and with a pocket full of miracles.